Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Customer-Led Groove Show, where we discuss and share the best practices and the latest trends in customer marketing, advocacy, and customer-led growth. Today's episode is brought to you by BASE, a pioneer in B2B marketing and the industry's first CLG ecosystem for customer-led marketers, sales, and product professionals. Okay, let's welcome the CLG team and today's guests.
Welcome to another episode of Customer-Led Groove, brought to you by BASE. I'm Scott Wilder, and today I'm with Georgiana Laudi. We're going to be talking about customer-led growth and her new book, Forget the Funnel. I was very fortunate to run into Georgiana online and encounter all her great articles and content and information about the funnel and also about customer-led growth. So Georgiana, tell us a little bit about you, about your book, and why you are leaning into customer-led growth.
So agree. I very similar sort of feeling when we connected, somebody else in the space talking about customer-led growth. It's early days for CLG. So it's always nice to, see other folks that are believers as well. So the background here, it's kind of long. I'm not sure how far back to go. I've been marketing in some way, shape, or form for over 20 years. Started digital marketing and SEO and e-commerce, and what I didn't know was conversion rate optimization and social media marketing and all those things, very, very early days in the very early 2000s. Had a stint at a marketing agency, loathed the experience, and discovered Twitter, which is going to get me sentimental about Twitter. But Twitter really did actually change a lot for me professionally, because I was exposed to the tech community locally. I started running local tech events. I started attending tech events. And I remember this sort of pivotal moment where Dave McClure was speaking at a startup festival. I want to say it was 2010 or something like that, maybe 2011. And he was talking about pirate metrics. And I was like, yes, finally. People understand there is this world for marketing post-acquisition. And I was sort of sold on this idea that post-acquisition marketing was, where it's at. And so I fell in love with the software as a service business model, the recurring revenue business model, because I believed that the world finally saw this, especially in recurring revenue businesses, this world where marketing drives revenue, plays a critical role in growth. And, everybody understands post-acquisition marketing and everybody gets it now. Of course, that was a very long time ago. People still don't 100% get that. But that was always sort of my MO. And it was a bit of why I went into and have focused since, being in my early marketing days, around 2010, I shifted to B2B SaaS almost exclusively. I've deviated from that a couple of times, but I really do love B2B SaaS. So went in-house eventually. And while I was in-house, at Unbounce, actually, very quickly growing, startup. I joined when there were, I think I was employee number 15. When I left, we were over 200 employees. So very sort of early days at a startup through to sort of, scaling up to, more serious type business, and went through that experience with a marketing background, but really getting exposure to this more holistic sort of view of the customer. And I was very, very lucky in about 2013, I had this experience, and I talk about this in the book, but I had this experience where I was visiting the Airbnb headquarters, and Lenny Rachitsky, who's, prominent in the product management space, a friend of mine had invited me there, and I saw their customer journey scotch taped to the wall, and I had this light bulb moment where I was like, no more pirate metrics, no more lifecycle marketing, no more down with MQLs and SQLs, down with the funnel. This is how we need to be thinking about our relationship with customers as this, relationship built on and based on, delivering value over time, helping our customers be successful. And it was this sort of eureka moment where I was like, if we help our customers be successful, we will be successful. I happened to be there with our head of customer success. And Ryan and I sort of stared at this thing and we were like, yes, yes. And we just immediately saw eye to eye that we needed to do this thing. And so as the story goes, we went back to our headquarters and with the head of product and co-founder, head of CS and myself, we built our customer journey map with KPIs associated to delivering customer value. And I can't credit our 900% growth the following 2 years with exclusively to that, as obviously there was a lot of factors there, but it did make building experiences for our customers so much more straightforward, a lot more meaningful for the whole team. It facilitated how we thought about our customers, how we talked about our customers, the value that our customers got from us. So it really did sort of operationalize the relationship with our customers in a way that we didn't have before, and just in a way that was a lot more meaningful. And so that was sort of what I didn't realize at the time is, you know, that's how I think about customer-led growth is, you know, really sort of operationalizing customer value for teams. And so that was the first sort of foray into that. And then when I left in-house, lots of demand in SaaS and tech marketing, just for, you know, very obvious reasons. And I met and synced up with Claire Sollentrop, who was employee number two at Calendly. And she had this background of customer research and jobs to be done. And I absolutely loved her approach. And her and I sort of connected these two things, you know, deep customer understanding and operationalizing that understanding and insight for teams. And so we put the two together. And that is our customer-led growth framework that we still, you know, use every day with all the companies that we work with. So yeah, that sort of brings you from like way back all the way up to today.
Well, I think I was an early user of Unbounce. When we first talked, I didn't say that. So, but a lot of what you say really resonates with me when I was at Intuit. And people are probably always sick of me saying when I was at Intuit, but I'll say it anyways. Scott Cook was the founder and close with Chris Christensen. So he wrote that article about jobs to be done. And it was really refreshing for me to hear you talk that way, because not many people in the space that I interact with talk about the, you know, what tasks people are trying to do or what jobs are trying to be done. And that's a great place to start. You know, you talked about customer values for teams and helping, you know, your clients, your customers understand their customer values. Say a little bit more about that, what it means, customer values for teams.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's sort of the easiest way to explain it is to really, you know, think about the process at a high level, first and foremost. So the goal of, you know, this understanding for customers is really understand who our best customers are. And the way that we do that is through research. When I say research, I want to acknowledge that that is a scary word. People don't like to hear research. Nobody wants to do research. We all know we should do it, but it's kind of like that, you know, that pill you just don't want.
Don't worry about time and money.
Exactly. And people worry about analysis paralysis. They worry about slowing down the team. A lot of founders that I talk to or earlier stage founders that I talk to say things like, oh, we've done customer research. I am our customer, you know, classic. And so I wanted to sort of highlight that because I recognize that when I say customer research, it can sound kind of daunting. But because we leverage the jobs to be done framework and the jobs to be done theory, which is essentially this idea that, you know, people buy a better version of themselves. They're not buying your product. They're buying what your product enables them to do, right? Because we're using jobs to be done to guide our research, we're able to do very straightforward, streamlined, and focused research. So I'm not talking about a 30-question, you know, customer survey here. I'm talking about jobs-focused customer research, either in survey form or interview form. And we can talk about methodologies and whenever in more detail. But that's kind of the idea, is figure out who our best customers are, why they're hiring our product, what we're asking them to fire, right, in order to hire our product. What triggered them to seek out a solution like ours? What are they looking for in a solution? You know, what convinces them to choose us? You know, what are they able to do now that they weren't able to do before? All that kind of stuff. If we can learn that from our customers, then we can really create this high level understanding of how we deliver value. So the research that we do is really to help create that high level understanding of who our best customers are. And then the sort of operationalizing part, the tying that to customer value part, really comes in at the customer experience mapping part. Now, a lot of people call this customer journey mapping. I used to call it customer journey mapping. The reason that we refer to it as customer experience mapping is because we think it's really important to take into account the problem space that people live in before they even realize that we exist. Because typical customer journeys take into account when somebody lands on our website. And so we think it's really important to also be deeply and sort of intimately familiar with the problem space and the problem that we're helping customers to solve, which is where the customer journey starts. And then furthermore, we refer to it as a customer experience map because it does go post-acquisition. And, you know, there's this world where, you know, getting to first value, getting to value realization, getting to continued value and value growth is typically a more holistic way of looking at our relationship with customers than typical customer journeys. Some people do customer journey mapping exactly in the way that I'm describing, but I try to use customer experience mapping just because people have very distinct ideas about what customer journey mapping means. And we really try to look at it a little bit more holistically. So we use the job to be done, that the identifying and understanding of our customers, ideal experience. And that is what we map across that customer experience map. So we try to understand what are the key milestones in our relationship with our customer. And then, through the lenses of what are they thinking, right? What kind of objections, anxieties do they have? What are the sort of pushes and pulls there? And then also, what are they doing either directly with a direct touch point with us or indirectly outside of our product, outside of our relationship? So we can understand the context in which they're making these decisions. And then also the emotional journey is helpful to understand too, because that, you know, gives us a sort of snapshot understanding of where our customer is in our relationship with us. So if you can sort of imagine what a customer, you know, experience map might look like with these three lenses, these milestones, in the whole, how it sort of breaks down, how we like to think about it is there's a phase where we're in the struggle phase, where we're experiencing the problem. And then there's a phase and there's multiple stages in there. And then there's the evaluation phase. From telling you stuff you already know. But the evaluation phase where really we're trying to help our customers get to first value as quickly as possible. And then there's a value realization where we've solved our customer's job to be done, or at least we're at the very beginnings of solving our customer's job to be done. Then there's continued value, which is begins the growth phase and value growth in the growth phase. Continued value is about sort of meaningful engagement with our product or our service for that matter, where if they were to sort of fall out of that type of engagement, we could be proactive in helping them get back in. So this milestone helps us figure out, like, are we delivering continued value to our customers? But also, if they fall out there by our measure of success, we're able to be, you know, proactive in re-engagement campaigns or win-back campaigns. And then value growth sort of speaks for itself, any expansion or, you know, further monetization or upsell, you know, referrals, that type of thing would be in that value sort of at the final sort of milestones. That's how we like to think of the customer experience across those types of milestones. Of course, for every product and every customer is completely unique. But that's the general sort of gist. So that's what I mean from going from customer research operationalized in this way for teams to figure out how good of a job are we doing at helping our customers get from one milestone to the next. Sorry, that was really long.
That's really helpful, especially the part about going beyond the web experience or beyond the app experience. You know, for me, it's always, what's their environment like? What are the distractions there on their desk or in their life? Right. My guess is based on your methodology, that's part of the whole experience. Whereas, you know, a lot of the bigger companies I've worked at, we've only said, okay, what are they doing on the website? What are they doing when they get to the call center? And I'm like, well, wait, there's a whole life out of that.
Exactly.
One thing I always struggle with is, so how often do you refresh this customer experience? Like, you know, I find that a lot of companies, it's planning time. Everybody creates their customer journey map and then it just sits in the virtual closet for, you know, 12 months until it's planning again. So I'm curious with your customers, your clients, how do you handle that?
Yeah, it's definitely something that we recommend is revisited at least annually. I would say even twice annually is ideal. It really depends on the company and the product. Some products are evolving so quickly, they can't wait a year. There's no way. It's a completely different product by the end of, you know, a 12-month span. As you can imagine, with a lot of startups, that's the case, right? Even the product even often changes from when we start working with a company to when we actually finish working with a company. The product has evolved. And so oftentimes when we're doing research, we're actually taking into account the future version of this product. So there's that. So definitely it's something that should be continued to be iterated on. One really helpful way to help it sort of ingrain in the team and not just, you know, gather dust on a shelf is to really leverage those KPIs. So each of those milestones, having a KPI, meaning a meaningful measure of success of our ability to help customers get from one milestone to the next, and having those KPIs be associated with either a team or department's, you know, performance goals, OKRs, whatever, you know, rocks, whatever, you know, planning and goal setting framework, you know, you use, but tying those KPIs and having specific goals around improving, you know, our ability to help customers get from sign up to first value, or from first value to engaged, or from, you know, a healthy customer to, you know, an upgrade or some sort of expanded usage, and setting goals around those, that really, really helps. Because then when the teams are tasked with, okay, I've got to improve this KPI, well, there's only one place to go. You have to go and understand the context in which you're creating, you know, optimizing the experience. And once you, that's the task at hand, it becomes very, very obvious. Okay, we really need to understand what's happening here. What direct touch points do we have with them? What's else is going on in their world? What are their anxieties? What's motivating them forward? And sort of that deeper understanding, and also how it fits in to, you know, the milestone before it and the milestone that follows it, and having that really helpful context. There's a quote I often refer to, which it's Eli Goldratt, I believe, it's like, all things are up for debate, but like, we all have to be looking at the same mountain. We're all climbing the same mountain, right? I'm not doing the quote justice at all, but we all, you know, having everybody sort of move in the same direction is the goal of this thing. So keeping KPIs very close at hand in terms of goal setting and targets, whether you do that quarterly or monthly. And then the other thing that I would say is when you're doing projects and you have like project briefs or program briefs, whatever you use internally, including those KPIs as your primary measure of success or secondary measures of success for the different programs that you're running, whether or not they're associated with your OKRs or not. So that can really help. The other thing too is that the most effective thing, which probably should have been mentioned first, is everybody needs to be involved. This can't just be a marketing project. If your product team's not involved, if your customer success team's not involved, if you have a sales team and they're not involved, that's a big problem. So you have to involve the major stakeholders from all the sort of customer-facing you know, departments in the company.
I'm curious, how easy or difficult is it when you work with your customers, your clients, to get a real cross-functional team together and to get them to work on these things? Like, you know, we're all talking about it. And then the other day I saw some data where, you know, X number of 100
teams are dysfunctional.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, we're all talking about cross-functional work and how important it is, but the reality is, according to this data, is we're not doing a great job.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we could have a podcast episode on that topic alone. It's a really, really big topic. But yes, I think the stat is something like 75% of cross-functional teams are dysfunctional, which is, you know, scary. But that's actually part of the benefit of this type of work, is that because it involves all those stakeholders and those key players in a company's growth, that's the only way that it can be successful, and it's an alignment tool for everybody. It's not the only alignment tool we use. There's lots, but it is a centralized way and sort of, you know, a tool for everybody's understanding about who our best customers are and the measures of success along the way. So in terms of executing, there's a number of different ways. Obviously, it helps to get, you know, the top of the food chain involved. With us, when we're working with companies, generally it's the founders or it's the product management or the CPO, so head of product, that's reaching out to us, and is really, you know, gunning to do this type of work, because they know that there's misalignment throughout the team on who their best customers are, and, you know, what the most advantageous positioning and messaging is, and that more holistic customer experience and optimizing the customer experience. So If those folks are involved, chances are it's going to be successful. It can be seeded through marketing. We've done a lot of work on helping marketing teams try to operationalize this and bring it into and introduce it into teams. One of the best ways to do that is, number one, get your main stakeholder involved in the project. And actually, part of our program, we have a CLG sort of training program behind our pro membership. And one of the first lessons is an email that you can send to your boss to get buy-in. And really the key, if you are in that position, if you're a practitioner or a head of marketing and you want to do this type of work internally for the company, you want to champion it internally, really the key is making sure that you're tying this work to the business value it delivers. So if there's something on the radar, right, that your CEO knows has to be solved, our trial to pay conversion rate is terrible, our churn, you know, we have to fix our retention, our website is not converting, our messaging is off. If there's some sort of, we call it a critical business opportunity, but basically like if your main stakeholders are aligned on what this critical business opportunity is, it can be very helpful to root this type of work in that business outcome, first and foremost, and say that this is what we're solving for first. When we do this type of customer research, when we try to operationalize the customer experience, we want to solve that specific thing, get some wins that are directly related to that business value, and then, you know, keep going, basically. But it's definitely an iterative process. It's a lift for sure. But getting the stakeholder buy-in is definitely the name of the game for sure.
Yeah, we'll have to talk more about like how you approach that Peter Mahoney is actually doing a course to help, I'll say, you know, director level marketing folks present to the C-level, right? So part of it is how you frame things. And we all, it's huge. So
valuable. Yeah.
We'll have to talk more about that. But so this is great. So you've laid the framework down for a lot of this stuff. So let's talk about like an actual case study. In your book, you talk about SparkToro. So I'm just curious about some of the insights that you uncovered there and how you apply that for SparkToro and their customers.
Yeah. So SparkToro is an interesting example. There's a lot of stories similar to that one, but if I drill in on the SparkToro side, so we actually worked with SparkToro twice. So Rand reached out to Claire and I pre-SparkToro launching, basically very, very early days of SparkToro. SparkToro was only about 3 years old. So he reached out to Claire and I. Him and Casey reached out.
Actually,
and
maybe just give a little background on Rand, because he has
on who Rand is. So Rand Fishkin, who was the founder of Moz, former founder of Moz. He's now the founder of SparkToro, which is an audience intelligence, audience research tool. Kind of a big deal. He was a major player, an influence of mine when I was in-house at Unbounce. He was an early investor in Unbounce. He, you know, mentored and worked with our CEO. So he was, a big influence, for me as a marketer. He's an OG as far as I'm concerned. So he reached out to Claire and I, with understanding that, you know, he needs to do this right from the get-go, and he wants to really understand and deeply understand who his best customers are and make sure that he's, you know, basically launching this product with the best, most highly resonant positioning and messaging. That was sort of the critical business opportunity, if you will, the first time we worked with SparkToro. And so that's what we delivered for them. And that's actually not the project that we reference in the book. What happened was that Rand, I mean, being who he is, tons of traffic comes to the website, the messaging and positioning on the website, performing quite well. What they found was the people who signed up for the product weren't activating into customers at the rate that they would have expected. So lots of free signups coming in, but not as many actually becoming, you know, high value activated customers. And so the critical business opportunity became, about a year later, how do we help more free SparkToro users, you know, activate the product, get value, and start to and convert into customers ultimately. And so we did customer research for them. We were in a position to be able to run surveys, which is a thing of beauty when it works. Doesn't always work, but when it does, it's fantastic. Typically, we do recommend interviews are conducted, very simple 20 to 30 minute interviews. In this case, we were able to get away with surveys because they had a very highly engaged customer base. Paying customers, happily paying customers. Their customers are very happy And there you go. And by learning from them and even sending them just a simple survey with open text questions, right, open field responses, we were able to get enough responses where we would see, where we were able to see meaningful patterns in the responses, where we could identify what the customer jobs were. There were a few customer jobs that emerged. There were two dominant jobs, though, that we basically needed to basically prioritize one. One of them was, you know, when I can't, I'm not going to remember what they are because this was probably about a year ago now, but one of the jobs was about, you know, I need more data points, right? When the information I've got already isn't enough and I need something new. And then another one was, you know, when I need, you know, sources that I've never heard of before and I need to stakeholder buy-in. I'm butchering these, but loosely, that's what they were. And we decided to prioritize the those with stakeholders, those needed to get buy-in, those wanting to sort of impress, so to speak, with, you know, all the resources they could come up with, you know, using SparkToro versus the other. And so with that, we moved forward and we could identify and connect what customers said was valuable, those specific customers, what they said was valuable to them, to the specific parts of the product that delivered that value. And because we can map those two things together, again, the customer research, what they said was important, these sort of top motivations and why people signed up for SparkToro and what value they get from the product, to the specific, mapping that to the specific parts of the product, we were able to develop not only messaging that could be more resonant on the website, but also customer onboarding that would line up with exactly what customers wanted to see, right? In the order that they wanted to see it, what matters the most and what helps them get to value most quickly. And so we, you know, we produced basically that messaging guide and that flow for the team. And then Amanda Natividad, who's responsible for marketing, she wrote an email sequence supporting that. There was an in-app, a little in-app experience supporting that as well. And they doubled their trial to paid conversion rate, or I'm sorry, their free to paid conversion rate. And it happened very, very quickly. I think it was only maybe a month or two, and their free to paid had doubled. So that's one example. There's plenty more where that came from, but that's a good one for sure.
Yeah. No, that's great. I don't know Amanda, but I've, from the bleachers, I've been really impressed with her. So,
oh, hell yes. Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, we're getting close to the end here. What advice do you have for folks that are in customer-facing roles in terms of how they approach research, what kind of methodology they should think about, things like that, how they operationalize the whole experience?
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, you've got to get some wins under your belt in order to sort of validate investing in this further, probably with your stakeholders. So I would recommend, look, low-lift research projects like surveys, customer surveys or website surveys, where you can basically you know, gather some really deep sort of insights about customers, and then you can actually take action on that, whether or not it's updating your website or updating your onboarding, like I just mentioned, and then proving that it works, right? So like get a win based on research. And then if you can get a win based on that research, chances are you're going to get more buy-in. There's a higher chance you're going to get buy-in, not only from your primary stakeholder, but also from the other stakeholders in the company, like your head of product, like your head of sales, like your head of CS. So getting a win under your belt is definitely where I would start. You know, we've got lots of, you know, resources about how to run this type of research. Obviously, we wrote a book on the topic to make it as accessible as possible. There's also a workbook that goes with the book that is going to be launching as well. So we have templates and, you know, survey templates and email templates galore, all stuff really geared towards helping practitioners, you know, roll this stuff out.
So where do I get your book?
So forgetthebookbull.com is definitely the best place to go for all of this stuff. But there's a link there for anybody who's interested in getting the book. It's available in pre-sale right now. You got early access, Scott. And so there's a PDF version of the book available right now. It's going to launch in early 2023, like the print version. And the workbook as well is going to be available in 2023. But if you are interested in getting access to more of those materials and the templates that I'm talking about sooner, we do have a membership that's also available on our website. It's very, very inexpensive. There's a great community there of, you know, research nerds and practitioners diving deep on this kind of stuff and, holding each other accountable and checking each other's work. It's awesome. So I would definitely say that that's a good resource to check out as well if you want more sort of hand-holding through the process. Awesome. And then you could also, hire us for a sprint. So that's the other way to work with us.
So two last questions. So one I like to always ask, actually I ask them both, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you thought about while we were talking?
Wow.
That's like, hey, Wilder, you forgot that one.
Huh. I don't know. I mean, the working with the team and executing, team-wise and really sort of getting buy-in for this stuff internally. Like I said before, it's a really big topic. There's a lot more to talk about there. I have no disillusions about the fact that this is, it can be daunting from the outside. So I'm like, yeah, it sounds nice to do research. Sure. That's not for me. My boss will never agree to that. So there's definitely a lot to dig into there. And there's a lot at play. There's a lot of factors why that is, right? Why is it so hard to be a marketer in tech right now? That could be another podcast episode on its own. It's a very sort of complex relationship, tech and marketing. So that came to mind for me, of course. What was your other question?
So the other question was, so who has influenced you or what has influenced you the most in terms of your professional career?
Right. You know what? I did mention the two that really stuck out for me that sort of shifted. It was a big sort of critical, moment and shift for me. The tech community and being exposed to, there's three, being exposed to the tech community and startups and software and SaaS. And then that other moment of like pirate metrics and post-acquisition. A post-acquisition role for marketing, that was a big shift for me as well. And then that other one too, which was really about when we deliver value to our customers and, if we help our customers succeed, our business will succeed. And that relationship really helped me sort of do away with the MQLs and SQLs and the funnel. And obviously, we named not only our company, but our book, Forget the Funnel. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, that story for sure. So those were definitely, big for me. If I had to throw in another one, it would probably be that I always knew I was going to be an entrepreneur. I loved working in-house, but I definitely have an insatiable appetite to help companies solve problems. And so I love jumping and, from company to company and helping companies, solve problems. That's probably my father's influence on me.
Entrepreneurship is great. I love the consistency in the branding, like the book. I'm sure
it's a real theme.
Company, yes. And then anyway, so that's great. So Georgiana.
Yeah, Gia is fine, yeah.
Gia, oh man, now you're telling me. Gia. Although I have to say, it makes me think of the chia plant or chia.
Well, don't get me started on my Twitter handle, but because it's Gia. It's Gigiiaa on Twitter. So find me on Twitter there. There's my Twitter handle. If there still is a Twitter by the time this.
I know. I was going to say, I got to get this all edited quickly. So otherwise, I'm going to miss it. Twitter might not be there. Although
I know.
Reading about Twitter and Apple going at it right now in the press.
Yes. So. Yes.
Anyway, it's been awesome having you here today. We definitely have to make it a doubleheader and do it again sometime and get you involved in the CLG campus. So thanks for joining us today. Any last words?
No, just thanks so much for having me. This was super fun. I can talk about this all day long, as you can tell.
No, the passion is awesome. And I love this stuff too.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you everybody for joining Customer Led Groove. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, and also Alexa. And most people at this point say you can like us. I don't say that. I just say play it forward, share this with somebody, and you'll make my day. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining Customer Led Groove. Remember, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on the CLG campus. Feel free to rate us, follow us, and leave a comment on any of those platforms. We hope to see you again soon when we're back in the Customer Led Groove.